he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday, the midweek edition, the highly anticipated day of the Fed meeting. This is the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. The markets are stepping cautiously today. They don't want to step on any landmines. It should be a contentious meeting. A rate cut is expected, and if we don't get one, expect a conniption. The Dow is up 87 points right now to 47,647. The NASDAQ, on the other hand, is down 35 points to 23,538. The S&P 500 is just twiddling its thumbs right now. It is dead even at 6,841. Small caps also twiddling their thumbs. They are dead even right now. The bond market, however, continues to be quite upset, not liking what it sees around the world and at home. 4.19 this morning on the 10-year. That's the highest it's been in quite some time. We finally got it down under 4, and now we're back up to 4.19. Gold is down a little bit today. Silver hit a new record yesterday, $60.90. Oil is down at about break even right now, $57.86 for the producers. And Bitcoin is rallying a little bit. It's up $1,192,036. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a fee-based only nationwide advisory and financial planning firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. You know, it almost seems like today is more highly anticipated than Christmas itself, Barry. You know, it's just kind of ridiculous how the Fed, how much power the Fed wields really at the end of the day. And the markets are hanging on every word, every time one of these Fed governors speaks or belches or whatever they do, coughs, the market reacts, and that's the way it is. Yeah, interest rates do play a big role in stock prices.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to finance 101, right? And interest rates or risk free rate, whichever you want to use it, you know, probably used in almost every, you know, formula, right? And so yes. It's a big input, and so that's why the Fed has so much power, is that it they move markets and they help set asset prices. I mean, just by the rate.
And what Barry is saying there, if I can get 4.19 fairly risk-free in a U.S. Treasury, you know, why would I go out and buy a bond for 4.25 or 4.3? I mean, you have to charge more for a bond to get people to buy them. And multiples in the market react up and down as interest rates rise and fall. We start the day at 22.50. That's where we are on the forward P.E. ratio of the market. And it's elevated right now because we're in a falling interest rate environment. If we don't get that falling interest rate today, I think you could see a pretty big temper tantrum out there in the markets today. So anyways, I think we get it at 2:30 today, and really the market's going to just tread water until then. They, at the end of the day, over at the Fed, are weighing the risk to the economy from high interest rates, higher than normal. We're about double what Europe is right now. And the Fed is weighing, on the other hand, the risk to inflation, which reared its ugly head a few years back, got up as high as 9-10%, double digits, has recently modified down to under 3%, between 2 and 3%, which is about normal. The Fed's a target price, but they still, you know, I don't think it's a guaranteed thing that you're going to get a rate cut. It's definitely going to be a contentious meeting. It's not going to be, okay, 9-0, unanimous, let's cut rates, boom, and let's move on to the next meeting. I think it's going to be highly contentious. You've got some egos involved. You've had a lot of rhetoric. You've got an outgoing Fed chairman who's kind of a little stinker from time to time.
He's on his way to lame duck status, really. I mean, after this meeting, it's going to feel like it from then on.
Yeah, so they are expected the Fed to cut the Fed fund rate to 3.75, the peak which we hit in July of 2023 was 5.5. Wow. That was way too high, and that was to bring inflation down. They started raising rates. We were at really low. We were at like 1% there for a long time, which helped cause the inflation in the first place. So all of that goes into the decision today, and we'll just see what happens. The shot heard round the world will happen at 2:30 p.m. today, and it's not just the U.S. markets that take its cue from our Feds. In our central bank markets all around the world, you know, they take their cue from our interest rates, you know, China, Europe, you name it. Okay, we still have a few more earnings reports to go. We're going to get some big ones tonight. I'm pretty sure Oracle will report, Adobe, and Broadcom will also report, and that's a pretty big one, really. Those Broadcom and Oracle are two major players in tech land, so we'll watch for those. In the meantime, the stock of the day, boy, this caught me by surprise, and we're happy about this. This puts a big smile on our face. GE Vernova, which is the energy arm of what was once a combined company, GE, until they spun off the medical, the healthcare division, and they spun off the energy division. That was a good move because the energy division holds nuclear power capabilities and assets. GE Vernova is up 12.5% today. That's a huge move.
Wow.
For $191 billion market cap company. And it's one of the chosen few right now. I think we own about 15 stocks in our premier growth portfolio, and one of them is GE Vernova. So that's going to have a big impact to the upside in that portfolio today.
Selling those natural gas turbines, right? I mean,
it's
one of the ways to build. You know, it's one of the fastest ways to bring new electricity online, and so that's they're in a boom of a business. So.
And they're raising their dividend too, which is a double whammy. As I drive by the railroad yard right next to downtown on the Charleston Peninsula. Where the boats come in and offload cars, Mercedes, Benz, all kinds of different traffic going out from the rail line to the shipping line. I see a lot of cars with big GE Vernovas on them, equipment, whatever they are. I don't know what they are. They say GE Vernova on the side. That's all I know. And they're on those rail cars. They're parked, ready to go wherever they're headed. And GE Vernova, one of the huge winners in the market. That's a surprising move. That's a utility.
That's a big one.
That's a utility, but they're going to make, their earnings are going to be up 28% this year versus last year. But get this, next year, 2026, they're looking to raise their earnings from $7.22 to $12.74. That's a 77% increase in earnings. And you know that our main, engine that picks stocks and selects stocks and invests in stocks is built on earnings, because earnings is the lifeblood of companies. And growth in earnings thereof is what drives prices higher in the stock market. And that's why we shun 1% and 2% growers like the plague, because where is the capital appreciation going to come from? We used many examples this past week of widely held stocks like AT&T and Pepsi and Home Depot, which at one time were growth engines, but those days have long passed. And we choose not to invest in single-digit growers and instead look for companies that where the blood is circulating and flowing and vibrant and oxygen is flowing. And that's where we prefer to invest, not in the clogged arteries of Wall Street. We'll be right back.
Said, don't you know me? I'm your neighbor. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the saga at NVIDIA goes on with these Chinese companies now that they President Trump has given them the nod, at least, for China to have access to the H200 chips. Now the question is, does China want them? Well, Alibaba and ByteDance, you know them, ByteDance is TikTok, have asked NVIDIA about buying its advanced H200 AI chip after U.S. President Donald Trump's decision to allow the export of the graphics processing units to China. Okay, so the Chinese companies intend to place large orders for NVIDIA's second most powerful AI chip should China give them the green light. Okay, there's the hang-up right there. Because China's kind of saying, you know, we've got chips that are almost as good. You really don't need to buy these from NVIDIA. So we'll just have to see. But obviously, NVIDIA's stock has not jumped at all on this news. And China's wanting to limit their companies, their tech companies, access to these chips. And it continues to kind of be a non-story. Now, NVIDIA has built into their chips location verification technology, Barry, that will indicate which country its chips are operating in, okay? A move that could help prevent its artificial intelligence chips from being smuggled into countries where their export is banned. That will be interesting. We'll see how many of those NVIDIA chips are buzzing away in Beijing these days, maybe. NVIDIA has demonstrated privately this feature in recent months, but it has not yet been released. So anyways, that's the saga there. You know, the more I look at 1,000 stocks a day, 800 stocks a day, the more I realize how important the chip sector has been in driving the growth of the S&P 500, the Dow, and the NASDAQ. It's really continues to be the only really vibrant sector. We're talking NVIDIA, we're talking ASML, we're talking Broadcom, we're talking AMD, Applied Materials, Coherent. Many other companies involved in that chip sector, it is by far the most robust, best-growing sector in the entire market. And, you know, really, it's driving the world.
It's driving GE. I mean, it's driving something like GEV, right? I mean, the fact is that you're, you know, we need these, you're building these data centers for AI, and you need all these ancillary, you know, items, right, to pull this off and make it all work, and power being one of them. You've You've we've even looked at what Carrier, remember Carrier
air
AC? It touches almost every part of, touching every part of the market, really.
It's no wonder that we, as growth investors, which we have no bias against any industry, I'm open to growth stocks in any industry. I don't care if it's retail. I don't care if it's oil and gas or aerospace.
We've owned John Deere. Remember in 2021, we owned John Deere and Premier Growth. So
whatever
nothing's off limits.
Decker's been a big winner for us in the past. Green Mountain Coffee was a big winner for us when they came along with the K-Cup. Again, we have no bias. Even I've owned housing stocks over the years. I've owned copper miners. I've owned steel stocks over the years.
Even fertilizer stocks.
Yeah. Fertilizer
in 2021.
It just so happens that right now, and I would say the most consistent performer over the last 20 years, really, since I've been in the industry, have been the semiconductors stocks. There's where the real revolution is. It's enabled the cell phone what it is today, and of course you've got storage and memory in there. Flash memory also very important. Micron is another one we own. That just continues. I mean, these other stocks. When you look at a Procter & Gamble, which is hitting new 52-week lows right now, it just can't hold a candle to the semiconductor industry.
Whoa. And we learned how, you know, it's not just the high. I mean, obviously the high-end chip is what's been getting, you know, so much discussion in the last few years. But, I mean, go back to COVID. Remember, even your little, you know, your easy-to-make chip, right, was in a shortage. And so, you know,
those
semiconductors
low,
are in
right?
everything.
Low-tech.
Right? Yeah. I mean, you know, what, Texas Instruments, you know, making you know, some of those little, you know, some of the chips that are just, like I said, more commoditized. But for a period of time there during COVID, you couldn't get any of them, which slowed everything down.
We're a world where semiconductors really have changed the world more than anything in recent years. Boy, yesterday I was looking at charts and I go, what is up with J.P. Morgan? It was down 4.5%. Of course, it's a member of the Dow. And there's usually always a story underneath, and when I looked up the story, it was that they were giving a cautious view on the economy, which they always are. I mean, Jamie Dimon himself is pretty much
a little pessimistic, right?
Pessimistic.
I mean, it always seems, right?
But this came from Marianne Lake, their CEO of Consumer and Community Banking at J.P. Morgan. She said she warned of a little more fragile economy. But they've also really ramped up their spending. We're not happy campers in our neck of the woods. They built a little J.P. Morgan branch at the entrance to our neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, I saw. Yeah.
Isn't that weird how they got away with that? I mean, we're a residential neighborhood. And now as I drive into my, you know, my community, which, you know, has a golf course and a country club
and a bunch of houses in there already. Yeah.
And a frickin' J.P. Morgan branch. I will never, ever open an account with J.P. Morgan because of that. Right? Hello to Rivertown. Here's J.P. Morgan. Well, go to hell, J.P.
It seems like the bank branch. I'm just surprised. It blows my mind that they're built. You know, that they continue to build bank branches. I mean, for the longest time, they feel like they've been sending
gas
us
stations.
Away from the. Well, they've been sending us away from branches. It's like,
I know.
You know, hey,
it's all online. Why are we?
Take a picture.
Everybody
of your chat.
Wants to be in Mount Pleasant. I see a new one going up from the 5. What's the 5? Something 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. FFIV. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
They're just everywhere. Okay, let's move on to rare earth. A little more
exciting.
Interesting than bank branches at the entrance to your neighborhood. Critical Metals launches Romanian joint venture for rare earth processing plant. That is a stock that trades on the NASDAQ, the symbol is CRML, but I have seen renewed life in these these rare earth stocks. You just have to take them for what they are if you're going to invest in them. Are they a hole in the ground surrounded by a bunch of liars, or do they have rare earth potential? Critical Metals is over in Greenland. But they seem to be one of the major players here. in the minerals. We'll be right back.
Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Maybe we should put a Gunderson Capital Management branch office at the entrance to Jamie Dimon's neighborhood, Barry. Well, you know, I don't know. It's probably not as accessible as mine.
It might be a little more expensive.
But let him drive by it every day when he goes to pick up some groceries. Oh, look at that, Gunderson. Look, he crammed a little branch in here right at the entrance to my neighborhood. All right, now, more rare earth. This is, to me, is a big story in the rare earth patch, and it involves Texas, of all places, all right? Guess where the biggest deposit is? Let's see, of the elements, gallium, which are used in semiconductors, beryllium, in the U.S., it's in Texas. It's called the Round Top Heavy Rare Earth Deposit in Texas. U.S. Rare Earth, which is USAR, is ramping up plans. And, you know, this is not like a hole in the ground. This is supposedly the richest known deposit of heavy rare earth elements, gallium and beryllium, beryllium, and it's a cornerstone of USA Rare Earth's integrated mine-to-magnet value chain, which also includes a 310,000-square-foot magnet manufacturing facility in Oklahoma, expected to be the largest metal and alloy-making and strip-casting capability outside of China, and a processing and separation laboratory in Colorado. USA Rare Earth means business with all of this. It's accelerated the planned commercialization timeline for Round Top. I'll have to find out exactly what city that is. Maybe our producer who lives in Texas has heard of it. But it's expected to begin operating its Hydromet demonstration facility in Colorado in early 2026. I mean, that's just around the corner, based on promising results of its recent and ongoing solvent extraction piloting. Hydromet will operate 5 solvent extraction circuits continuously to generate the operational data required to proceed with commercial plant design. Now, we know that all of these distilleries or these refiners of the rare earth left the U.S. and went to China. Well, we've got to get the supply chain under control. This is the commercial production at Round Top. It's called the Round Top Formation in Texas, up near Oklahoma. And USA Rare Earth is joining the Russell 2000. Welcome aboard. We need some good stocks in that Russell 2000. So that symbol is USAR. I have a fair few shares in my hip pocket that are buried in the ground, and I don't plan to do much with it until, that thing starts cranking out gallium and beryllium. Okay, Australia's landmark teen social media ban goes into effect. Is this going to be a trend around the world, and what would this do to Facebook, Meta, and Google, and others under 16? They are banned, which I think is a good thing, but that involved 200,000 TikTok accounts being closed, 440,000 Snapchat accounts and 150,000 Facebook accounts closed because of kids under the age of 16 in Australia. Is this a trend? We continue to watch Japan because they, right now, their interest rates have almost doubled over there since the beginning of the year. It's quite shocking, really. They did get a fairly benign PPI report, but still 2.7 for Japan. It matched forecast, but that's pretty hot. And Japan is talking about a interest rate hike for the first time in over two decades, and that's rattling. That's one of the reasons we're at 4.18 right now. And as I did my newsletter on Saturday morning, I saw interest rates up about 10 basis points across the board in Europe, Germany, across Spain, Italy, down in South America, Brazil, etc. So anyways, and it's all coming mostly from Japan and the issues that they're having there. And Japan also is going at it with China. So now you've got another hot spot in the world. Silver surges past $60 per ounce. Wow, that is a huge. You know, silver's doubled this year. Silver started the year in the low 30s. And now you're at 60. Who would have ever predicted that? I'm going to call it the number one asset class of 2025. What will be the number one asset class of 2026? I don't know. Maybe inverse funds. Who knows? We have to wait and watch. But silver has really put on a show here. And the bullish 2026 outlook persists. It's pretty rare to see an asset class have two good years in a row. Usually you start to see some rotation this time of year, but they're crediting tight supply and also all of the uses for silver, you know, which gold doesn't have. So anyways, I don't know that I'd be buying at $60 per ounce. I would be enjoying the holdings that you might have in silver coins. Silver bullion, whatever of this hard out. I think silver, you know, it's hard to break down gold into small increments to make. Let's say you wanted to go to the market and buy a sack of potatoes or something, right? And the currency was defunct. Silver's got at least, you know, you can do $10, $20, $25 a lot easier than you can with gold. That's what I see the usefulness for silver in, is as being a real viable currency if things were to go sideways. Crypto, I'm not so sure, but we have had a nice bounce in crypto. Crypto is but look, it's at 91,000, Barry. It was at 125. I think this has sent a ripple through the crypto sector, especially those people that really believe in it, that it's going to be the currency of the future. It's got to dash confidence a little bit to see it go from 125,000 down to 85,000. Now it's getting its sea legs and it's
down 27% still from that high of 125, even where it is right now.
Yes, and it's still in a bear market, and one of the biggest Bitcoin bulls out there, Standard Charter, they lowered their forecast, well, for 2025, which only has 3 weeks left. They lowered their
forecast. How do you forecast it?
I have no clue.
I mean, I'd love to know how you forecast Bitcoin. Well, that would be
their forecast was 200,000. So, you know, they're not going to make that. It's at 90 right now. They're now lowering their forecast to 100,000. They cut it in half. Whoops, they were way off. That's like having a forecast on the S&P 500 this year of 13,000, right? And now you're cutting it to 6,800. These guys were way off. For next year, they're cutting their forecast from 300,000 to 150,000. This is Standard Charter. I don't know where Kathy Wood is at these days. She was up in the millions, you know, with her forecast for crypto. But anyways, good luck. I mean, I guess there's analysts that can somehow do all of the predictions on what the supply and demand is for crypto and come up with some kind of forecast out of that. But not having much intrinsic value that I can see, I just don't know how you come up with the forecast. So anyways, and they say they expect crypto to reach 500,000. This is Standard Charter, who was way off with their prediction, way off by 2030. GE Vernova, again, the stock of the day. The company doubles its dividend. They expect their stock buyback authorization to go from $6 billion to $10 billion, and they raise their earnings projections. How many times have I said it?
It's like a trifecta.
Yes, stocks trade on earnings expectation. Earnings are already built into the company. The P/E ratio, looking backwards over the last 12 months, it's the forward P/E that looks forward to the next 12 months the stocks are trading on. And even more importantly, right now they're trading on 2027 forecast. GE Vernova ups their forecast, and look what happens. The stock up 13%. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of the Best Stocks Now show. Boy, when you talk about vibrant, flourishing companies like a GE Vernova or many others out there, there's another side of that coin. There's a Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel down again today. Their sales down 6% year over year, and they took a hit. They lost 74 cents this quarter. Their earnings down 264% as they made a couple of huge missteps. They're out of headquartered in Tennessee. Cracker Barrel, most of us have been to one, I'm sure, at sometime or other in our lifetime. They operate 657 full-service Cracker Barrel restaurants in 43 states, with plans to open one or two in 2025. I wouldn't call that a growth company, Barry.
Did they really say one or two?
That's what it says. Man, yeah, and you know, we had one right here in Mount Pleasant on Highway 17, but there was not enough traffic.
Well, it never made sense. I mean, whenever that one was there, and I've never seen one close except that one. And the point is, you know, usually they're right off the interstate. Well, that one is at the end of the interstate, and you got to get off and go down a ways. I mean,
it didn't make much sense. It was more of a neighborhood restaurant, like an Applebee's, and there wasn't enough neighborhood support. Now it's a veterinary clinic.
Yep.
So anyways, poor management, what can I say? You know, at the end of the day, Larry Culp, GE, I mean, the guy is phenomenal. He came in there, struggling company, mismanaged for years. When the original GE, the Cracker Jack manager that they had, and CEO, and could never get their groove back, and along comes Larry Culp, and man, he's got this thing cranking. And then you take Cracker Barrel, which was once a $180 stock not that long ago, making $9 per share, and lines out the door. Now it's a 27, from 180 down to 27. You have to point at management.
You got to know your client or know your customer, and that's
know your customer and complaints about the food being watered down, not homemade anymore, a lot of microwave ovens, no more kettles. It's just all kinds of problems.
Man, I hope they didn't change that country fried steak. I mean,
I don't know. I have not been in one for quite some time. anyways, that's the disaster. It is not. It was down more. You're probably going to get some turnaround activists, value investors coming in. That's not my cup of tea, buying into companies that are really struggling, trying to get their groove back. People see value in all of those stores if they can get the magic back and get people coming back. But again, that's not, there's a certain type of investor. And, you know, like an Elliott Capital Management or some of these others, Raiders that go in there and chop it up or whatever they're going to do. But it needs a major facelift turnaround. And the problem is that costs money. And that's showing in the loss per share that they are reporting. There's a biotech in play today, ABVXT. Eli Lilly acquisition rumors have that one all excited. It's a French biotech, a French biotech. I'm going to add it to the app today. FDA is going to expand their COVID-19 shot safety probe to include adults. That's a very controversial area. There's a lot of belief. There's a lot of evidence that the vaccine shot had adverse, a lot of people had adverse conditions arise because of getting the shot. Well, let's get to the bottom of it and find out. They're investigating whether the COVID-19 vaccines are tied to deaths. They're already doing that for children. And, of course, you know, RFK and a lot of the anti-vaccine people behind this. And let's just get to the bottom of it. That's all. Medline announces terms for a record-setting U.S. IPO. That's going to be a medical products maker. It could be the biggest IPO this year if they go public, which I think they are in the next couple of weeks. Taiwan Semiconductor, November sales jumped 25. Now, there's another one. I mentioned all of these vibrant semiconductor companies. How about Taiwan Semiconductor? Even though the threat of a China invasion at some point in time hangs over their head, that's not stopping the company, the stock. It's been on a roll here over the last couple of weeks. It's within striking distance of its all-time high. There's another company flourishing. Sales up 36% year over year. Earnings up 45% year over year. They command about 80% of the semiconductor manufacturing business. They get the designs sent to them by NVIDIA or AMD or whoever, and they do the manufacturing. They are the fab for these companies. So anyways, they're doing really well, 25% year over year. Again, I'd have to say the chip sector is really driving the world economy and the stock market these days. What happens when it starts to level off? I don't know. Hopefully somebody new is poised to come along and take the place of the chip sector. Okay, well, that was there was a lot of news today. Of course, you know, the market's going to tread water until 2:30. It would be kind of crazy to place any money on the table, take any money off the table over the next several hours, 2.5 hours between now and the Fed decision. I'm not 100% that they're going to cut rates, but you know, the prediction markets have it at 85%. So we shall see, and I think it would have an adverse effect on the markets. Should he say no hike, we're going to be data driven until January and see where the data comes in at, you know, that would not be good. Between now and then, you get 4 weeks of the newsletter. We've had a record-setting year for the newsletter. There's no question about that, especially with the four-week trial that we offer. You can get in on that by going to our website at GundersonCapital.com. We've also had a record-setting year for new clients coming over to Gunderson Capital Management, not happy with where they are. looking for a different approach. Give us a call, 855-611-BEST, to set up an appointment, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.